Hello and welcome to the Journey to a Dream podcast, which is brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance. Now, throughout this series, I've spoken to riders and people generally involved in motorsport here on the Isle of Man. Then I had a great idea. Why not go for a trip around the TT course with a rider and find out some of the insights that you get from doing that? So the good news is I persuaded someone to do it. The bad news for him was that I was driving.
So my name's Martin Morris. I race TT now. Started racing back in 2014, 2015. Didn't have much in the first couple of seasons and then really started kicking off in 2016. Made my Manx debut in 2022 and then went to TT in 23. Main focus is road racing, although I do quite a bit of short circuit. Start of the year and tail end of the year. Went to Macau last year as well, which didn't really work out with the weather. Main focus is the roads, with TT being the focal point of the season, really.
What's the quickest you've ever been around the TT course yet?
This year I did 122.8.
Right. What's the slowest you've ever been round? Because I think you're about to beat it.
Actually, at the Manx, one of the first laps I did, we had a red flag at the Craig. We got stopped at the Craig and told it was a red flag. And then after about 5 minutes, we were told it wasn't a red flag, and we carried on. So that registered actually about a 50-mile-an-hour lap. So I've actually got about a 50-mile-an-hour lap down as one of my first laps.
Did you always want to do this? Was something you grew up around bikes? Is it a family thing?
No. So none of my family have ever had anything to do with motorbikes. My mum and dad don't know anything about bikes. My dad, they don't even know what a bike is. It's just green or blue or red, you know. I never actually sat on a motorbike until I was 21, when I did my CBT to then do my big test. I just decided one day, I thought, I know what I'm going to do, I'm going to ride a bike. So I did that when I was 21. And then in 2011, a couple of my mates were like, should we go watch TT? Flew over last minute to watch TT, and it was the year the scene got rained off. And we watched it a few places, you know, Bottom of Bray Hill and Endicott Capodi. And I thought, this is ridiculous. I absolutely hated it, and I thought, this is just stupid. So obviously we came back in 2012. But we came on the road bikes in 2012, and I had a pootle round, and then I spent most of my time just going over the mountain and back, over the mountain and back round. That was it. I just thought, I'll come and do this. I hadn't even done a track day at this point, so I was ambitious. So when we were on the fast boat on the way home, I said to my mate, he said, you're coming back next year? I said, no. He said, what? I said, I'm going to come and do this. And he laughed at me, and I said, no, honestly, I said, I'm going to come and do this. I said, I'm not coming back to the Isle of Man until I come to race it. So that was 2012, and then he came back every year since to watch, and I went off and started doing a few track days and got my race licence and started racing. And then the next time I came back was in 2021, when I came over to do some newcomer laps for 2022. So that was that. So it was all sort of came out of nowhere, really. I didn't really have anything to do with motorbikes. All my knowledge of motorbikes is post sort of 2010.
And was that an interesting conversation to have with the family then, given that they had no interest in the sport at all?
Well, the only knowledge they have of things like road racing and TT is all the negatives. Like everybody outside the sport, that's all they know about it. So you get the usual sort of like pushback on that sort of stuff, but there's not much they could have done to stop me anyway. So they just say okay and then let you go and do it.
And how did you find, obviously you have the whole newcomers process, and I know loads of people find that really helpful. There's a whole programme in place, isn't there, to support people who want to go on the mountain course. But I think sometimes we forget how much is involved outside of that, and, you know, prepping the machines, getting sponsorship. How easy did you find that?
I think the prep work in terms of coming over and doing laps in the car and doing laps with other people and learning it that way, it's quite easy, isn't it? You just pay for your ferry crossings and just drive around the island and learn. Sponsorship's difficult. I think everybody struggles with sponsorship every year, big teams to privateers. That's probably the most difficult. I have anything, you know, everybody can prep machines, everybody can have people to do engines and get the bikes ready. You know, riding the bike's the easiest part. It's the bit you build up to, and then once you actually get to riding your bike, that's the part you've been building to for all that time. But the money to be able to do it all and do it all properly, that's just I think that's the sticking point for most people. And I think most people that drop out of the sport, that bail out of the sport and retire and give it up, most of the time it's down to cost.
And because people find it really hard, don't they, going up and saying to somebody, look, will you support me financially for this passion that I want to do? And it must be a hard question to ask.
Yeah, it is, yeah. I found that most of my sponsors or people that have helped me are people who have actually approached me. People who come to the TT to watch every year and live local to me, or friends, or family friends, and people I've known beforehand that like the TT, and then find out you race it, and then they want to help you. I find that if you go to ask people for sponsorship, or you go to approach people for sponsorship, and you talk about, do you want to sponsor me to race the TT, and you have to explain to them what it is, you're never going to get sponsorship out of them.
And I wonder if people also think, you know, sponsorship equals thousands and thousands of pounds, but actually, speaking to some of the riders that I've done, you know, literally sometimes anything makes a difference.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at, everyone just thinks everyone's going to be asking for 50,000, 100,000 pounds, but yeah, you see it, and when you walk around the paddock, you see all the time there's boards up telling you how much stuff costs, whether it's £20, £25 for a lap of fuel, or £350, £400 a pair of tyres, or that sort of thing. And if you get a few people on board chipping in those sorts of figures, that makes a massive difference too.
Do you know how much you've probably spent up to now?
In total?
Yeah.
Yeah. I reckon it's in upwards of 250 grand, 300 grand, 8-9 years. When you take everything into account, with buying new bikes and the maintenance and engine refreshes and new motors and entry fees, everything like that, it's probably more than that. Yeah, it's probably over 300 grand, I'd have thought.
And is there any point where you just think, ooh, why have I done this? Because you have to make so many sacrifices, don't you?
Yeah. You do every, I'd say at least once a winter, once everything's finished, it's packed away, and you're not racing your bike, but you're still spending all the money it costs to keep everything ticking over. I probably have one time every winter where I sit down and I go, is it all worth it? And you think, God, we're spending some money here. Got no other lifestyle. There aren't many people who race and still have a normal lifestyle outside of it as well, because it just costs too much. But then you quickly get over that and you realise it is worth it. And then as soon as the season starts again, you think, yeah, it is definitely worth it.
I've lived here all my life, and yet, you know, I don't know this course half as well as all the riders on the TT course. It's just,
well, I can tell you now, this corner coming up is not 30 mile an hour.
How quick could you go around here?
What, Jeffries? I've heard some people say it's like they take it completely flat on the superbike, so, you know, Dunlop and Hickey and Davey are probably 180 plus through here, 190 maybe. I'm not though, but it's not got 30 sign up, so we go as fast as we can.
And you were watching during one of the MGP races, and what is that like when you see actually how quick they're going? And obviously not quite as quick as you go during the TT, but sitting there watching that, seeing them go past and thinking, that's what I do.
Yeah, I went to watch the junior, the twin race from Gorsley. And I've never watched from there before, actually. To be honest, I haven't watched anywhere, really, apart from in the paddock for the last few years. Everyone has the same thing with the race. A lot of the races, none of us really like to go and watch, to be honest. It is spectacular, but sometimes you watch it and you think, this is a bit much. And then you forget that you're actually going exactly the same, or a little bit quicker or a little bit slower through that section, and you think, but when you're doing it on the bike, it doesn't feel anything like that at all.
Really?
No. When you watch it, it looks ridiculous, and it looks a hell of a lot quicker. But when you're on the bike and you're doing it, you're just that focused and in control, and everything slows down. It just doesn't feel that fast. Yeah, I'm not a massive fan of going to watch all the races from everywhere. It's a little bit scary sometimes.
So it was a deliberate decision then. You did the Max Grand Prix once, and then you were focused on TT then. There wasn't any question of you not sort of making that jump at that point.
Yeah, the main thing was TT, and I didn't have enough of a racing background or a racing career up to there to be able to go straight to TT. And to be honest, I wouldn't have been quick enough anyway. But I always knew that's where I wanted to go, and I always knew that's where I wanted to go as quick as possible. I've always done that. I did my rookie year, and as soon as I could possibly step up, I moved up to the next level and got the next license grade. And then as soon as I got rid of that license grade, I moved up to the next. I always enter everywhere I go the highest level grid I can enter, the fastest grid. I just feel like it pushes you forward, it develops your riding, your racing quicker. I feel like you progress a lot more racing in and around those people. And I know that the Manx and TT are slightly different because you set off 10 seconds apart, but in practice week you get passed by people, they drag you along and you learn off them for a mile or 2 miles, or if it's Michael Dunlop, 200 metres, and then that's basically all you get. It does help you progress a lot quicker, and I definitely think that the lap times I'm doing now on the Super Twin 600 are higher than where they would have been if I hadn't made that step.
But then you wanted to do racing over here. You've done the MGP, you've done TT, so you've kind of achieved those goals. What next?
So I've missed the Southern 2 years running. So next year is definitely going to be the Southern. I'll come back. I'll try and get back for the Classic. I think we're already talking about a Classic bike with somebody. It's meant to be on one this year, but it's sort of those sort of things fell through. I think one set of people broke the 750 and couldn't get it working in time, and then another one fell through. So we missed out on that. And then it's all focusing around just trying to keep chipping away at TT and going 2 or 3 miles an hour quicker and keep progressing up the timesheets.
Have you got an ultimate goal in mind?
I don't know. I'd like to get some top 10s on the Twin and some top 20s on the 600. And then, I mean, ultimate goal, everyone would say ultimate goal is winning something, but I'm so far off at the minute, I need to focus on just trying to get to the next milestone. So I've done 122.8, I think 125, 126 is the next step, and then go from there. But I think the lap times are so quick now, 136 is soon. The next time we get a TT with good weather, I think we'll be up to 137, and then everyone will be going on about how long until we get 140. And then you've got to think, to just be 10 mile an hour off the lap record, you've got to be doing 130s, which is crazy, isn't it? Absolutely crazy.
I suppose the thing is, isn't it, the machines sort of move on, don't they, and the technology advances and whatever, but surely human reactions can only go so far. There's got to be that point where it's like, okay, that is the limit, do you think?
There would be, but I don't think we're near that yet. I think the limiting factor at the minute is tyres, I think. I think most people would agree that we're getting bikes with more and more and more power, but you can't get that power onto the track. Superbikes now are there or thereabouts with the stockers. We've got stockers with 220 horsepower, and we've got superbikes with 250 plus, and they're basically the same lap time. And actually, the stockers are easier to ride. So I'd say that the next big step's going to be tyres, and then I don't think that we're going to be in the realms of struggling to focus that much to go a little bit quicker. Not quite yet.
So this couple of weeks you've been helping out a team. Are you quite sort of hands on with your like own bikes and stuff and doing the mechanical side of things?
Basic stuff, basic maintenance and prep work, yeah, no problem. But anything major with like engine work and stuff like that and stuff, I don't have the knowledge to do that. So
have you found being on the sidelines this couple of weeks?
Yeah, I've been a bit not been too jealous of the Classics, because I've seen a lot of people wait until 10 o'clock at night to get back, and a lot of people coming back in course cars. I'm not very jealous of that. But the Manx lads have had a great week. They got 8 laps on day 1, the lap times were straight up to like the high teens, and then it just put them in a, put them all in a real good stead, didn't it, to have some fast racing. I was jealous of that.
And I think, you know, like you say, the racing was incredible. That last race, the senior MGP, was gripping but then heartbreaking for Chris Cook at the end, and you kind of just see how much it means to people. You know, they put their all into it, and you know, to for him to lose by that half a second was just crushing. But then Kevin Canny winning was just amazing. So seeing both sides of that in the winner's enclosure, I think, yeah, just there's so much emotion in this sport.
Yeah, I know. I actually sat in Jack's the night before, and Chris Cook was on the opposite table. I forgot he'd had two races, so I was like gutted, like he didn't you know, get the result on the first race and this and the other. And I said, like, what are you going to do for next year, or what are you going to do? And he's like, we'll go again tomorrow. And I was like, oh, you got another race. And so I was watching it, and he pulled the pin on the first, like literally for the first sector. He got past Jamie Williams by Ramsey, and he was like 25 seconds up. And then I think Canny was number 16, wasn't he? So he was way back on the timelines. And I think he sort of went under the radar for a bit, didn't he? And everyone forgot about him. And then he was chipping away and closing it down. And then he was all of a sudden coming to contention from nowhere. And everyone just thought Chris had it in the bag. And I don't know whether maybe everybody thought that, and they weren't updating. They weren't updating his pit boards quick enough, if he had pit boards or something. But yeah, it's a real shame. I like Chris. Half a second over an hour and 20 minutes. It's
nothing, isn't it?
Yeah, you'd be gutted, yeah, wouldn't you?
Well, Kevin said when he came in, there was somebody who'd given him a board around the Craig, and it turned out to be Joe.
Yeah, Joe, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Yeah, and actually, I'm always surprised by the people, particularly sort of like towards the higher end, who choose not to have pit boards, who don't want that sort of information. Although, saying that, I don't actually know how you'd be able to take that information in when you're going at such speed. Do you have pit boards out when you're...
No. Because the thing is, I say this to people, I'm riding as fast as I can. You can tell me to go faster or go, it's not going to make a difference. I'm riding as fast as I can. It might make a difference if I was P2 and it said 4 on, like 4 seconds on the board, then you might, like Canny did, his last sector was unbelievable, wasn't it? But I don't normally have pit boards. Although at the Manx, in my newcomer year, I had a pit board, but I didn't know it was for me because no one told me they were doing it. And it was Frankie Stennett, and he was like, stood there every lap coming round, he was waving his pit board and pointing, and I just assumed I had somebody behind me because I'd overtaken a couple of people on the road. And then when it came back in, he was like, I was putting a pit board out for you. And I was like, yeah, it took me to the last lap coming down from the Craig. Then when I actually had a look and I realised who it was holding the pit board, I was like, oh, that's probably for me, that was. But yeah, made no difference. I couldn't have caught the next guy anyway.
How do you read it though when you're going that quick? How could you read what it even said?
Practice. The first few times you have a pit board, you can't read anything. But I sort of just take, you just sort of glance at it and take like a mental, like a snapshot, like a picture, and then you just process it over the next like 3 or 4 seconds of like what it said. That's what I do anyway. But like if you see the picture of Canny's pit board yesterday, it just said P2 4 plus 4, so it's not too difficult, is it?
So where are we now?
Just through McGuinness's on the run down to Bagarra Top.
Do you reckon you could name every corner? No.
No, I don't know the names. Most of the time I'm going, you know, the one just after this before there. But I don't know all the names. And the problem is as well, like I've just learned Appledean, I think, just after Greba. You're only going through there for what? 5 seconds. So it's like, if you learn everywhere, you'd be, there's like this bit after this bit after this bit, it'd just be too much, wouldn't it?
But have you got like a mental picture in your head of the course though? Because presumably when you're coming down here at whatever speed you're coming down this bit at, you need to know what's coming next.
Yeah. That's it. When you come and learn, you come to learn the exact layout, what's next. So once you come out of one section, you know, some people split it down into like little sectors and then they have like a reset. So I know in my head from sort of start line to Ballacrane, And then when I get to Ballacrain, I have a bit of a... That's where, in my head, my next sector starts, or my next bit starts. And I think if you tried to learn it all in one go, straight off, it'd be impossible. So you come around and you learn, you watch the onboards, and you learn little bits, like 3 miles, 5 miles at a time. And then you learn those, and then you start piecing them together.
Are you sort of, as you sort of take notes on it? Because some people do, some people don't.
I did this year for the first time. I didn't do a single lap in a car or a van or anything at TT. I mean, the weather was awful. We had loads of cancellations. We were hanging on for a long time, all the time. By the time it finished, I was like, I've had enough of this. So I didn't go out in the car, but I came back a month later and I drove around for a few days and I made a load of notes. Because the problem is, you're away for a year and then you come back next year, you go out and do your first couple of laps and then you go, oh, I remember that part there. I should have done this, I should have done that. So if I make a load of notes to remind me, so next year I'll come and do come over before TT and do some laps in the car and read the notes, and before I go out on the first day of practice, I'll, you know, remind myself sections where, like that one for instance, we've just gone through down the bottom of the 13th double left hander. It's so much faster than you think it is, like unbelievably quick.
Was that just the way I was driving? Yeah
unbelievably quick. And then I think every time I go into it, you just think, oh, you should be going a lot quicker through there. So it's little bits like that, that if you can do stuff that just makes you faster straight away, then it gives you a better point to build from.
Do you ever get bored though of going around just doing laps on open roads?
On open roads, yeah, definitely, because you get stuck behind people and there's a lot of speed limits, and especially if you come close to TT and Manx Week, then like you've got the whole island's 50, isn't it? And you forget, yeah, it takes you an hour and a half to do a lap, and it's like, oh. And then you come to Kirkmichael and you can't see anything anyway, except for it's parked on the sides. But then you get onto the mountain, and then you just...
I don't think that's going to happen today, just so you know.
Okay.
I just find the concept really odd of that, you know, obviously, yeah, we're just driving through Kirkmichael, there are cars parked on both sides, obviously you've got to obey the speed limits and whatever, but so mentally you have to kind of... Obviously there are no cars because the roads are closed, but you have to sort of mentally turn off that instinct to obey all the speed limits, or do you not have to?
What, when we race?
Maybe the first time, but the first time, does it not just feel really odd?
No, it's a racetrack. You're not looking at the speed signs. No, I've never struggled with that, and I've never been fazed by the furniture. I think people know within like the first couple of laps whether it's for them or not. I know they did on the newcomers speed controlled lap this year at the Manx, they did a couple of like laps for potential TT newcomers. So there was a couple on the back of there, and it was just sort of, I don't know how long it's been in the pipeline for, but it's sort of like, come and do a closed road lap speed controlled. I think they went out behind Milky, and see what you think of it, because you'd get a good gauge from just that one lap, even though it's probably only like an 80 mile an hour lap, maybe even slower, but you get a good gauge. And if you find yourself riding around thinking that tree looks a bit dangerous, or that curb sticks out there and things like that, if you ride around like that, it's definitely not your sort of thing. But if you ride around and come back in and go, I didn't even think about it really, and then I think you'll be all right. Just don't hit them.
Have you got any idea of how many laps you've done on open roads? Do you keep a little count?
150, 200. I probably did 50 or 60. Came over 5 weekends really before I came to race. I think I did 4 on my own, and I did a newcomers weekend. So I reckon I did, 50 or 60 laps. And then since then, I've probably done another 50 or 100 on my own during TT and outside of coming back over and helping out some people.
And so have you got a part of the course that really you're not particularly keen on?
Bagarabot. Yeah, I mean, most of the course is... Yeah, I like all of it. Some bits more than others, but there's not many places I really don't like. But I love Bagarra Top, and I go flying through the top of Bagarra, and I'm like, that's brilliant. And then as soon as I'm out of it, I'm like, oh no, it's Bagarra Bottom. I just don't like it. And I know some people absolutely love it, They absolutely love it.
Is it just because it's a, is it a technical bit, or is it just what?
I don't know. I just don't like the big compression through it and things like that. I don't know. It's not my thing. A lot of people like it because it's just like full bore, and you just fly through it and massive compression, and you know, it's cool. But I don't know. I'm not as committed through there as other people, put it that way.
And so then your favourite part would be?
I've got a few bits, but I think come up at Glen Helen, up Craig Willie's Hill, and then you come out onto the Cronk, and then the kink at the end of the Cronk body, and then you come out of there on the back wheel, and you run down the hill on the back wheel, and then you've got the bank is just lined with people all down the left hand side, and you're going down there at, on the big bike you're probably still 170, 160, 170, and then you're on the back wheel, and then you've got a little jump, and then a flat out right hander, and then you're back two, and then back one or two, and then you're into the 11th. That section there is just like, it's an absolute roller coaster. Same as come out of Quarter Bridge, and you just don't shut off. You go all through St Ninian's, down Bray Hill, through the bottom Bray Hill, down towards Quarter Bridge, and you just roll slightly for the kink, and then heavy brake it for Quarter Bridge. And that section there is just like, you get to Quarter Bridge and you're like taking a deep breath, because that again is just absolutely flat out full commitment, right, like maximum concentration. Those sections, the really fast stuff, I really like.
Just went over the Laugh Bridge. That was pretty speedy there, wasn't it?
didn't take off.
Not quite. So you said next year you want to do the Southern, which is one of the road races over here you haven't done yet. Just give us a sense of what you need to put in place, like once it gets to the end of the season, what sort of things you're doing, trying to make sure that you can hit all of those racing markers that you want to.
So once I've finished everything this year, what I'll do is I'll look at the calendars for next year, work out everything I want to do, work out pre-season sort of testing program. You know, most of us go to Spain now. Just, you know, it's relatively cheap. You can go to Spain for 3 or 4 days with everything included for, you know, not much more than a UK race weekend. And then I'll work out a plan, everything I want to do, and then start trying to add it up cost-wise, work out sort of budget that I need for it, as well as like engine refreshes on the bikes and getting a new Super Sport next gen bike and things like that. And then you go to work out how you're going to pay for it all, you know, look for people to come on board, sponsors, things like that, and then how much money I've got to play with and all that sort of thing.
And you're doing all of this alongside working full time as well?
Well, actually, I left my job a couple of weeks ago so I can find something else that's more flexible, because when you're employed you only get sort of 4 or 5 weeks off a year, and then, you know, you go to TT and the Northwest and you've used 2/3 of that, 3/4 of that. So that's why I couldn't come to the Southern this year. I couldn't do Tangier because I didn't have any time off work. And I just think, like, I want to give a bit more commitment to the racing and try and do a little bit more. I see people who are racing around, sort of started similar times to me and doing similar things, lap times and performance as I was 2-3 years ago, and they've progressed a bit quicker, or they've gone a little bit faster, they get better results, and they're just on the bike a lot more. And ultimately that comes down to cost. I think if it was a lot cheaper to do, or if everybody had a lot more money, I think you'd see like lap times, lap records, you know, the races being competitive, a lot more competitiveness in all the races and things like that, if everybody had the ability to commit the seat time and things like that to the sport, you know. So that's my aim this next season, is to have one season or two seasons where I give it full commitment, maximum seat time, try, and if I don't improve that much, at least I tried.
So that must be quite a precarious position to be in, though, thinking, right, you're giving that job up. Have you got anything else lined up yet?
Yeah, I'm doing a few bits, but I left like a week before. I left when I went to Armoy, and then I've come pretty much here a week later. So I haven't actually had time to find anything. But
so, and Armoy was your first time there, wasn't it?
Yeah, Armoy was the newcomer. Armoy this year. Yeah, that was good. Again, I've been trying to do it for the last couple of years, but haven't been able to go there. I'd definitely be going back to Armoy. Yeah.
And how different or similar, I suppose, is every newcomer experience?
Well, yeah, very similar. You do exactly the same processes, really. You go drive around the circuit or do some laps, watch them on boards. It helps if it's an Armoy or a Cookstown where it's, you know, a minute and a half or a minute and 45 second lap, and it's, you know, a couple of miles, not that many corners. You know, you can learn that much quicker. But it's the same process. You go there and you watch the onboards, you do some laps, and then you do your speed controlled laps, and then you just go out and chip away and get faster every lap. And at Armoy, you've got to work out where the bumps and the jumps are, and where you can push, and where you have to be a little bit more careful. Yeah, but all the newcomer processes are very similar.
And it does seem like there's some really good relationships within the paddocks and whatever, and there are riders who genuinely want to help and support newcomers be the best that they can be.
Well, yeah, when you do your newcomer laps, it's either current or ex racers. So with TT, it's like Milky, Johnny. At Armoy, it was Barry Davison, who's raced there for years and years and years. And then even just outside of the newcomer laps and things like that, you know, there aren't many people who won't help people. Whether it's at TT with another TT rider, you know, ask somebody for an opinion, or what you do through here, or I'm really struggling in this section, what do you do? Or like I've been over helping with the classic, but there's a lot of people racing the Manx that I did my newcomers with back in 22. They were still racing the Manx and they're struggling with little bits, and I've gone out and done a lap with them in the car, and I've said, like, what are you doing here? They say, I really struggle at this point, what are you doing here? And like I would have asked somebody like Pete or like Jamie Coward or someone at TT last year, like, I'm struggling through this section, they've told me, and that's improved my lap time. Then they're saying they're struggling through the same section, and I say, well, this is what we do here, or this is what I do, or this is what Pete told me, other people have said to do, and it improves. And then you tell them, and it's all just, there's a lot more help in road racing than there is in short circuit, I think.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I don't want to say, really. I think with the danger, everybody just wants to help everybody. And also, I think that with the roads and stuff, you go out and you ride the best you can. You ride as fast as you feel comfortable at that day, at that specific time. And if somebody goes out and goes quicker than you, it's just fair play. Yeah, especially around somewhere like here, you go off 10 seconds apart, so you never see anybody, really. And if you are battling with somebody, you'll never see them. And if you go and do whatever lap time and somebody just goes quicker than you, then they obviously had a better run, or they pushed a little bit harder. Especially the guys at the front that are doing 135s, and then somebody goes and beats them doing 136. It's like, yeah. But everybody does like to see everyone else do well. There aren't many people who don't like each other, I don't think.
And that danger element that you mentioned, does that ever worry you? Do you give that much thought?
Not particularly. Maybe beforehand a little bit, get nervous. Everyone gets nervous, I think, in holding air and things like that. But good nervous. And then when you're on track, I don't think you think about it at all. You just focus on, it's just a race, isn't it? You just focus on hitting your markers and things like that. There are times when I think everybody's done it where you go out and you're in a race or a practice session and get crossed up somewhere, or something happens, you clip a curve or something like that, and you sort of recover it, hopefully, and then come back in, you get off the bike and you sit down, and then that's when the realisation hits sometimes, when you think, oof, that was a bit of a, that was lucky. I think people always ask if you ever had any moments. I think the only moment I've ever had is literally where we've just come through, just before the council yard. I was on the Super Twin and Josh Brooks come past me on his R7 down Solvay, and I thought, alright, I'll try and tag on as much as I can. So went through Kerrimore, and on the little left on the way to the sort of like the run down past the council yard, you go over like a bit of a crest and you take off. And I hadn't I was trying to chase him that hard, I didn't straighten the bike up enough. So I went over, crossed up, and when I landed, my feet come off the pegs and dragged me into these little sort of like half curbs on the left hand side, and my tyres got stuck in the gutter on the left hand side. And it was probably only for like half a second, but it felt like it was for an age. And I was like really trying to get the bike to just bounce back out, and it did. It just sort of broke back out at the last minute, and I sort of recovered it and I carried on. I hadn't actually lost that much time to the hairpin on them, I was surprised. And I thought nothing, and then when I come in and sat down, they were like, oh, how was that? And I was like, almost completely spanned it coming into sort of out of Kerrimore. So that's when it hits you afterwards, when you get a bit of time to reflect on it and think back. But then it's time to go back out and do it again, so you forget about it quite quick and you just crack on.
I guess once you've gone past that point again, it's like, right, put that to bed almost.
Yeah.
If you were taking somebody around the course to do learning and whatever, we're going just gone past Ramsey Hairpin, what sort of things are you saying around this part here?
So we're just into Waterworks 1. Waterworks 2, very tricky. So it's a really late tip in, so you miss sort of this first bit and then you roll it in late here. It's quite good, the markings they put on the road to run the cones out for T2 and to make it one way is actually pretty much the line you need to take through. So if you're going quite slow, you can sort of see and track it. But as you up the pace, you sort of need to know the line yourself. But Waterworks 2 catches a lot of people out. A lot of people end up running wide there and hitting the wall. That's where one of the Americans I sort of know from a few years ago actually crashed this year in Super Twins in practice. High-sided or crashed or hit the barrier or something, I don't really know. But yeah, we didn't get through it, put it that way. Where's this now? What's this?
Is this a gooseneck?
Yeah, Tower Bends. Goosenecks all the way around, yeah.
Oh, well, it's had the gooseneck sign there.
We can't have the gooseneck sign after the gooseneck, can you? It has to be before it.
So probably do this in about 30, yeah.
It's probably not much quicker. It's a slow corner, first gear, sort of 40, 50 maybe.
I should say at this point, I am quite relieved there is somebody much more careful than me in front, so we're all good. And do you know, the weird thing is, coming up here, it's been raining for most of the course, and you come up here on the mountain and it's just, you know, the weather is something that I think we talk about all the time during any road racing meeting, because it is that microclimate, and then what comes with that is all the hanging around, the frustration, you know, the likes of when you couldn't get out for that last race during TT 2025. And it must be, I don't even know how you describe it really, when you put so much into it and something like that happens and it's just beyond the control of anyone.
It is frustrating, but the thing is, I think spectators get more frustrated than the racers sometimes. You see a lot of stuff on social media about cancellations and about the weather and things like that. I think what people forget is it's like almost 40 miles, the circuit, and we've driven from Douglas all the way around to here, and we've gone from complete no sun whatsoever and rain to clear sky and then back again. And we can be down in Douglas and you can't see 10 foot in front of you on the mountain, and you can't run it with that. Or we could be down in Douglas and it could be hammering it down at Kurt Michael and you just can't run it. But people just don't understand. I think people don't seem to understand. And then with like the wind and the weather, other weather conditions, it's like, I think they get a lot of, I mean, everybody knows now insurance is the biggest problem with everything, isn't it, in the world. Insurance, liability and things like that, and compensation and all that. But if they keep running stuff when it should go or when it can't go, then you're going to struggle to get an event to come back to in the future, aren't you? I think if they have to do certain things to get the insurance and to keep the races going, then it has to be done. But that senior this year at TT with a wind, that was that was a difficult one.
The riders who wanted to went out for that lap and then came back in, and some of them sort of fed back to the organisers. And I think there is a real sense that the organisers do take on board what the riders are saying, and they certainly seem to in that instance. But I think you said at the time that if they'd said go, despite the fact your gut feeling was it probably wasn't the best idea, you would have gone anyway.
If they'd have said we're going to go, then I'd have gone. It wouldn't have been fast, but I'd have, you know, and I think a lot of people would have gone. A lot of people would have gone that didn't want to, because it's a senior, and that's what you're there for. And you just ride to what you feel comfortable. I think there'd have been quite a lot of people go. I think there'd have been quite a lot of people retire after first lap and in the pits and things like that. You know, we're coming up the mountain mile now. I was coming up here, and also at the bungalow, the straight run up the bungalow, and I would think I was lent over sort of 15-20 degrees lent over to the right hand side, but going in a straight line, like lent into the wind just to go in a straight line. And the problem with that is if it's gusty and then all of a sudden the wind dies down, you're veering off to the one side, aren't you? It was really, really strong winds. It was unpredictable. I almost ended up in the bank on the run up to Kronkivody, because it came across from the one side and pushed me too far to the left and things like that. And if you've got 50 bikes doing four laps, that's a lot of potential issues, isn't it?
So where are we now?
End of the mountain mile. These three are flat, and you are doing it flat. 45 mile an hour.
There's a car in front of me. That's not my 45 fault.
45 mile an hour on the mountain.
Genuinely not my fault, though, is it?
No. Well, you could have overtaken them and then carried on.
Yeah. There's a car coming in the other way.
And then we've got the mountain box, four lefts. I followed Michael Dunlop over the mountain the one year, and I kept with him in his slipstream all the way up the mountain mile. And then we went into those four lefts and come out. I couldn't see him. It was just embarrassing. But it did make me quicker the next time I was into those lefts, though. So it worked.
And have you got sort of the riders that you sort of like follow their sort of lines and the way that they ride?
Following their lines, things like that. I mean, there aren't many places where the lines differ that much. And then you don't really get a choice, especially the really fast guys. They go off, they're going off well in front of me. So I don't really get a chance to follow those guys. You know, most of the time, if I want to do two laps, because I start so late in the session, if I want to do two laps, I've just got to do two laps straight off. Whereas Dunlop and Hickey and the top guys, they can go out, do one lap, come in, make a change, and they can go back out again. That's when I tend to get past. If they stay in the pits for a little bit and then they come back out, they'll catch me up and they'll pass me. And to be honest, I seem to get passed once or twice a year by Michael. I've never had Dino or Toddy or Hickey come past, but every year it seems to be Michael, which is fine. He's obviously doing something right, isn't he? So I just learn from him for a bit.
So then we talked a little bit about sort of sponsorship and the finance side of things. There's obviously a bit of a responsibility, I guess, on a rider when they've got people who are supporting them financially to be a little bit out there and publicly show their support. So whether that, you know, I guess, you know, stickers on the bike and whatever, but also the social media side of things and whatever. Is that something that you are a fan of?
I'm not a massive fan of it. I have social media. I'm terrible at managing my social media, the posts and things like that, and keeping everybody up to date. And it's not because I don't want to do it, it's because I just always forget. I forget to take pictures, I forget to take videos. I don't have anyone that comes along that takes the pictures and the videos and keeps on top of it for me, or helps me keep on top of it. And I'm always focused on other things, and then I struggle with that side of it. And you're right, with sponsorship and things, that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's all about social media and exposure for your sponsors and things like that.
So where are we now?
We've just come out of the Craig and we're on the run down to Brandish.
So at this point in a race, what are you thinking?
Well, on the big bike we're doing about 180 here, and then I'm trying to make it past this sign, this sign for Brandish before I break. And every time I come into it, I think, oh, I could have gone a little bit further. Could have gone a little bit further. But it's so fast, it's unbelievable. And the entry is a little bit bumpy in and around here. You see on the road there. And just trying to maximise the speed through there, because then you've got this huge run down to Hillbury as well. But it's that section there out the Craig, it's so fast. There's a lot of places where you're sort of running into, you've got time to think about it, and you're sort of psyching yourself up. But that particular one, I don't think I've done it where I've not thought I could go quicker into there. So maybe next year I'll work on faster into Brandish.
And if you're thinking about somebody listening who's like, God, I really want to do this, I want to race on the mountain course, what would be the best piece of advice you could give them?
Do your homework. You've got to do as much as you possibly can. When you do your newcomer year and you go out of all the newcomers and you look at people's lap times and you'll pass people on the road and you'll see, it'll be so obvious to everybody straight away, the people who have put the work in and learned where they're going and done the laps in the cars, done the onboards and worked everything out, to those who haven't. When you're following somebody and they don't know where they're going, it's quite scary actually. But I just don't understand why people would want to come and race this but not want to put the time in to learn where they're going. That's just, to me, my brain just doesn't comprehend how people can just be like, oh yeah, I've watched a few onboards, I've done a couple of laps, I'll just go and work it out. It's impossible. I just don't understand how that happens. And I also think that's also something they're working on with the organisers in TTN Manx, with the newcomer process. You know, you've got the newcomer weekends and you've got this, and people are assessed, and I think if people genuinely show that they don't know where they're going, I think it'll be commented on, will it?
So where can people follow how you're doing with racing? I know you say you're not brilliant at keeping it all up to date, but
so Facebook and Instagram is basically all I've got. I don't know what else there is now, but yeah, Facebook is just me, my name, and then Instagram is MarkMorris32.
What's 32? Was there a significance in that number?
Race number, that's just my race number, yeah. When everyone starts racing, you either pick a number or get allocated, and then it just sort of sticks with you, doesn't it? So yeah, I've got 32, and that just sort of stuck. And then when you come to the roads, you get allocated numbers anyway, so with the Manx and TT, you just get given a number, so you just run with that. But and yeah, short circuit, majority of the time I'm number 32.
Okay, so we're just about finished. Do you reckon it was the slowest time you've ever gone round?
It's been about 2 hours, hasn't it?
No, it's been that long, actually. Not that long.
Yeah, a 25-mile-an-hour lap.
Probably can confirm that this sport is not for me.
In my defence, the weather was awful and there were lots of people in front of me, which is probably why we didn't go above 50 miles an hour. But thank you very much indeed to Martin Morris for taking part in this episode of Journey to a Dream. The links to his social media are on the podcast page, so do give him a follow. Journey to a Dream is brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance, and you can find out more about them by just going to their website. It's kawasaki-insurance.co.uk. And as ever, we're also supported by the Andreas Racing Association. Racing finished for this year pretty much, but still go and give them a follow and find out maybe how you can get involved with them next season. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, take care. Bye bye.